You are Locked On Utes, your daily podcast on the Utah Utes. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
On a Tuesday episode of the Locked On Utes podcast, here on the Locked On Podcast Network, you never know who's going to drop by, but you know if somebody is going to drop by, that they're probably somebody who drops bombs. And the only kind of bombs that get dropped on the internet, on Twitter, come via a certain Ute Zone writer. We're going to talk about some potential Bartle bombs. Yes, that's right. Recruiting, a big weekend of recruiting for the University of Utah. Last weekend, another one upcoming. We're also going to talk about more of this Oregon-Utah game because it was just so good. And there's so many aspects to still break down about it. What better thing to talk about on a Turkey Tuesday than more stuffing from that Utah-Oregon game? All that coming up on today's episode of the Locked On Utes podcast for November 23rd, 2021. Happy Tuesday, my Utah friends and family. Brian Brown here today, your co-host du jour, perhaps, Locked On Utes podcast, brought to you by Sonos. Sonos is the official sponsor of ESPN College Football. Go to Sonos.com to learn more. And as always, thank you for making Locked On Utes your first listen every day. You can find us for free. We are available on all platforms. If you feel like going on a date someday, slide up in those DMs at Locked On Utes. We'll take you out for a Twitter date. As usual, when you hear my voice, it typically means that I'm either rolling solo or riding with a friend. Today, no different. A friend of the program, a friend to everyone. Steve Mann, dropper of the Bartle bombs, smiling in the sun.
What's up, Brian?
Dude, it's so good to have you, bro. I don't know why it's like I space these out so much, but like it's good to have you. I figure I'm going to finish this season the best way possible, and the only way to do that is with Steve Bartle. It's a big week for Steve Bartle for multiple things. There may be a milestone in your future at some point, maybe
a milestone.
Yeah. Like an accomplishment, like a certain number of days present on the earth or something like that. Like an anniversary of sorts, you know, a celebration.
I got married in February, Brian.
That is an excellent answer right there. we'll skip the pleasantries and we'll let Twitter figure out what exactly it is that I'm talking about.
November 27th.
Big day. Celebrate.
Big day.
Celebrate.
Big day.
Balloons, popping bottles, all that kind of stuff. I want to ask you the most important question that I think is on everybody's mind. It's especially after this weekend, everything that went on, everything that you saw, what is the most important side at Thanksgiving dinner?
Oh, man, what a way to start this one. The single most important side at Thanksgiving is the stuffing. Like every piece, every part, every side plays an important role on the plate, right? But stuffing is crucial. Stuffing is key. You've got to have the stuffing because stuffing at Thanksgiving is just, it's a different world. It's a brand new experience each and every year. So stuffing, it's the best side of stuffing without a doubt.
I agree 100%. And I'll argue with anybody. I'm not a big fan of arguing typically, but I'll argue with anybody who disagrees. what would you say was the stuffing from Utah's game against Oregon this weekend.
Oh, the stuffing of the Utah-Oregon game? Well, obviously it was the run stuffing.
Oh, there it is. Just Mitchell to Gobert over here. I don't know which one of us is which, but you know, just man, that felt so good. Wooster to Carlson. Maybe that's a better
there we go.
A little better branding for the podcast. I tweeted out a bunch of statistics about the offensive line, but it was just an absolute clinic in how to manhandle and wear down a team. I was nervous about what Kayvon Thibodeau was going to do if he was left to his own devices. Luckily, Utah realized the same thing, that it was going to take a village to find out where Kayvon, where to go. What did you see from what Utah did schematically in order to neutralize him as a threat? And we say neutralize, and he still had like 7 tackles, which that's a pretty impressive game, especially at the defensive end position. But he just was never an impact guy. And, you know, I remember a shot, I think in the third quarter, seeing him just sitting on the bench, and he just looked like he was just gassed.
Yeah, no, it was, so he had 7 tackles, right? And like tackles, and what kind of value is a tackle? And you look at kind of his line, only one of those 7 tackles was a stop. And so what is a stop? Well, kind of like, you know, running back, it's the difference between, you know, 5, 6, 7 yard carry and a 1, 2, 3 yard carry. A stop is something that keeps offenses behind the chains. And so he was getting tackles. Yeah, but he was getting tackles down the field where Utah had gained good yardage. So, you know, and not only that, like he came into this on an absolute tear as a pass rusher. You know, he's played in 8 games. But really 2 of those were, he played like minimal snaps, like 10 or 15 snaps. So really like this is 6 games worth of work. And he had something like 34 total pressures in 6 games. Like that's remarkable. Yeah, that's remarkable. So he's, you know, he's getting after it, and you see it on film. Like you watch ESPN highlights and, you know, he's teeing off and he's just getting into the backfield over and over and over again. He finished with 3 pressures in that game against Utah. And it was, like you said, Brian, it was a total team effort. And I loved what Andy Ludwig did to utilize his tight ends to kind of space things out. And then also to move him inside, bump him inside. Because, you know, if Kayvon keeps on playing the most outside guy, where Utah plays 2 tight ends to one side, how far can you get out there? You know what I mean? Before you just remove yourself from the pass rush.
Yeah.
And so there was that. And so he would bump inside. And when he bumped inside, like that was, it made things easier for Bam, where he didn't have to worry about the angles, the speed. He was able to get his hands on him quickly. And like, look, Kayvon Thibodeau is an incredible talent, obviously top 5 talent, but like Bam is strong and he's massive.
He's massive.
And like, that's the thing, is once he got his hands on him, it was, you know, it was a lot of game over, yeah. You know,
Scotty Stevens, who's the photographer at Utzonen, does an amazing, incredible job.
Amazing job.
He is
both him and Joel.
If he listens. Yeah. If either of them are listening to this right now, and I hope they have better things to do, but yeah. If either of them are listening, they're going to be like, oh no, I don't, like, I'm not trying to blow sunshine up anywhere where it doesn't normally shine. Like
they're good.
Go check out the galleries. Cause you see them popping up all over the place on the internets. Cause that's what people do, is they just steal photos. Not because they're trying to, it's just kind of how we do things now. But he caught a picture and he sent it to me of Bam. And I'm like, my first reaction was like, oh crap, Bam's in no land. Like he's in danger, Bam Robinson, danger. But like, then I thought to myself, like, no, he's not, because he's enormous. And sure enough, Scotty's like, yeah, he actually reset and managed to stay with Kayvon. And really that was where I think Utah did such a good job, is that they just sent so many different things at Thibodeau. Yeah. And it was just like, if it was just him on Bam all game long, he's eventually right. Going to get him. But like you said, they were flopping tight ends to the side. They were pushing in that wide 9 way outside. And, Perhaps I overhyped Max Brown in his breakdown of how Kayvon Thibodeau has to be blocked or how Oregon uses him. And I was reprimanded by a let's say a coveted source close to the situation who said, I think he's wrong. And I said, really? Tell me why. He's like, I'll show you Saturday. Sure enough, this source did. I don't want to reveal who it is, but I got called to the carpet and I was wrong. And like Utah, I know they were confident in the game plan and I was a little skeptical of it, but they just knocked it out of the park. And it's just, it is crazy to see the internet stand for Utah right now and what they did on Saturday.
Well, not only stand for Utah, stand for the offensive line. Yeah. You know, like that's a whole nother world of standing. Like we've been fighting this fight, Brian, for the offensive line for some time.
Five years at least.
And
this is where I bring up the fact that, like, we talked about this for a long, long time. If you lose six offensive linemen to medical retirements, it's going to take forever to rebuild that. And lo and behold, you have a top five offensive line in the country. You have a Joe Moore award-winning level offensive line. And all of a sudden, things are so much rosier. And it's just like, I know people are still upset about the slow starts. Let it go.
Let it go.
Like, it's going to be like that forever. Like, this is how Utah plays. They're a developmental program. They want to grow into the season. So you're going to see some bumps and bruises. But as I'm looking through these numbers, both advanced stats, you know, just the basic yards per carry stats, like, they're just dominating out there.
Right. No, and you know, to your point, Brian, like, Oregon came into this one averaging 21 pressures as a pass rushing defense, right? Like, so they're getting 21 pressures on the opposing quarterback. And as a team, I already talked about Kayvon Thibodeau only finishing with three. As a team, they only got eight pressures in that game. And I think only four of them were at the fault of the offensive line. Like it's just been, you know, the offensive line has just been a remarkable turnaround. You know, as much as this has been about Cameron Rising, you know, and the difference that he makes, it's about the offensive line as well. And just kind of coming together. And Cam deserves a ton of credit for it because he instilled that belief in them. I firmly believe that, you know, he played as big a role in the turnaround for the offensive linemen as anybody else did as well. So it's been awesome to see that. The offensive line has obviously been key. And now over the last 3 weeks, they've really come on strong in the run game. Like they didn't, obviously the Oregon defense, it's really good. Like it's a really, really good defense. It was an absolute grind on Saturday, but the offensive line did enough, got enough push, got enough, created enough space, created enough lanes, enough holes for the running game to keep them on the field, to keep them moving down the field. And, you know, I think the biggest thing when you're talking about the success of the offensive line and the success of the run game, Utah didn't have like the big plays that they had against, you know, Arizona, Stanford, and UCLA. They didn't have those big run plays. Those were missing. But what the run game did in this one is it kept them in third and manageable yardage, right? So they ended up 11 of 14 on third downs, which I think is by far their highest mark. If I would have to go back and check over the last 2 weeks because I'm sure they've been close.
Yeah, if it's not, it's darn close.
Yeah. So 11 of 14 total, only one of those was a third and long of 9+ yards. So they kept themselves in short yardage situations on those third downs, and they were able to convert most of those. So it was a really, really good job. And I think that is more an indication of their success in the run game on Saturday night than anything else.
You mentioned that Cam Rising, I think, gave him some belief. He also bought him some time early on because we heard Kyle Whittingham talk about in camp, like they had to get this line set because they couldn't find any cohesion. And oh my gosh, Kyle Whittingham knows what he's talking about with football. What a wild concept. I think what Cam did is he could move outside of the pocket and move the defense enough with his feet and his scrambling ability. And he did it to an extent against Oregon with his scramble where he got outside of Kayvon Thibodeau, which, my goodness, like,
holy smokes.
I don't know how much like juice he was running with at that point, but the same level juice he had driving Kyle Whittingham's truck in the preview video.
Did that surprise you? Like, honestly, as you watched him pull away from Cave, like, did that surprise you?
It did, but like, I hate that I reference this. I remember that spring in 2020 where we saw him live for the first time, and I was just like, this dude's legit. Like, he looks so springy. Yeah. At times he looks a little bit stiffer out there than what I remember. So maybe they just need to figure out a way to get him to run in sweatpants while he's playing actual games. Cause I don't think I ever saw him practice in anything but sweatpants, even when it was like 80, 90 degrees out there.
Sweats are key, bro.
Yeah, he's all about the sweatpant game. Like, I love that. But you know, when you're a thick boy, that's kind of how you have to roll, right? There's a lot of junk to fit in a very small trunk.
Expandable waist, sweatpants.
Yes. Stretchy pants, critical for Thanksgiving. But, I think I was surprised by it. Pleasantly surprised by it. Like, yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. Like, this is happening. And I think to a degree, it really changed the kind of the initial, vibe of the game.
No, I agree. I remember, so I was sitting there, I think Michelle Cole Bagley was one down. But like, I think,
oh, you mean all my friends were there when I couldn't be?
Yeah. All your friends. Sorry, Brennan. Sorry. But really, so he picked up the one scrambling to the outside, and then he picked up another first down, I think on the very next series, on the very next, you know, downs, set of downs where he pulled it and ran just up the field and picked up 7 yards. And to me, like, that was really kind of the moment where I was like, okay, like, he's got those. And that's kind of what Cam has been about all season long. Like, he's had his games where he's been super prolific. The USC game. What was the other super prolific game? Oregon State. You know, he had a very productive day where he's just throwing it and slinging it around. But overall, when you look at game to game, like, his biggest thing is he just makes the plays when they need to be made, however they need to be made, whether it's throwing, whether it's running, whatever needs to be done. Like, that's his biggest attribute. His biggest contributions to the season is he's just made those plays and he has a knack for it. And there's something to it. Like, you can't explain to me when he's this consistent at it, like, there's not something to it.
You're absolutely right. And it was interesting. I can't remember what part of the game it was, but there was a play where he was down at the goal line and he kind of hesitated on what to do. And it really stuck out my mind because I just haven't seen that from him at all this year, where he kind of like second guesses himself. And I think he ended up throwing, I believe it was the one where they were coming into the north end zone and he threw the ball down low and Oregon kind of almost intercepted it. Not really, but like,
but yeah, like, close. Got away with that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that's really what stood out to me is like his decision-making and this offense and their efficiency. It is very 2019 and Tyler Huntley-esque. And I think that a lot of it has to do with just his command of the offense and everything like that. And he's willing to sit aside and let the offense do what it needs to do in order to get the ball down the field rather than pushing either his numbers or his agenda or anything like that. And it just, you know, the leadership is really what has just transformed this offense. And like you said, he gave the offensive line belief. I think he's given the receivers belief. That's allowed everybody to just really buy in and develop. And it's a shame. This is the team that should be the banner carrier for why playoff expansion matters, right? Because this is a team that if there was an auto bid could really cause some damage. Our good friend Bud Elliott mentioned that in a tweet. Like, who wants to see Utah in a playoff?
Yeah. Nobody. No, absolutely. Yeah. No, and it's like, it's this team now where they're playing with a lot of confidence. It's a young, talented group that's still learning how to play. They're buying in more and more each week into what is being coached. And so, yeah, it's definitely a team where there's plenty of reason you want to avoid these guys just because, again, the youth, the inexperience, these guys are growing into being really, really good players. Like, it's amazing that they're having this much success despite, you know, they're still inexperienced. Like, it's crazy.
I want to talk a little bit more about the defense on the other side, but I have to ask you, Steve, are you a daily fantasy player?
I am not a daily fantasy player.
That's perfect, because I'm going to tell you about something called Prize Picks that is going to knock your socks off.
Touche.
They are a leader in college sports daily fantasy. They offer more college football props than anyone in the world. All the star players, the Power Five. Plus, did you know this, Steve? They offer G5 and mid-major players as well.
Yeah, oh,
that's right. Do you have a favorite G5 or mid-major player?
Whoever is starting for the punter at San Diego
State. Yes, I knew it. Yes. That's my guy. I love him. 70-yard punts. I don't love him. Didn't love him.
Not week three. Didn't love that, but love him the rest of the season.
Yep, but we'll celebrate him here. So the cool part about Prize Picks is you can pick any 2 to 5 players you want, and then it's just an over and under on their projections. So if you are going to take San Diego State's punter, probably plan on taking the over. But you can win up to 10 times on any entry, and it's just you versus those numbers. So you don't have to worry about playing against me. You don't have to worry about playing against the San Diego State punter. The best part about it is if you use the promo code Locked On, you'll receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. That's double, Steve. So if you put in $100, you get $200, and you get $200 to bet on your favorite punter or whatever other players you want. You can mix and match. You could go with Cameron Rising and Brandon Carlson if you wanted. You could go with Raleigh Wooster or Tavion Thomas. So you can mix and match across different sports. You can find Prize Picks on their award-winning app in the Apple App Store or on the Google Play Store. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It is that easy. Prize Picks is safe and offers fast withdrawals. Don't hesitate. Check out prizepicks.com. Use promo code Locked On or go to your app store and download the app today. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. This is it. The putt to win the tournament. If you sink it, the championship is yours. But on your backswing, your hat falls over your eyes. Is this how you're running your business? Poor visibility because you're still relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software? To see the full picture, you need to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system to power your growth with visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more. NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying well ahead of your competition. 93% of surveyed businesses increased their visibility and control after upgrading to NetSuite. Over 27,000 businesses already use NetSuite, and right now, through the end of the year, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program to those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/lockedonncaa. Head to netsuite.com/lockedonncaa for special end-of-year financing on the number one financial system for growing businesses. That's netsuite.com/lockedonncaa. Whipping back into shape here on the Locked On Utes podcast with my main man, Steve Bartle.
Whip it good.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Do-do.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Two.
When you play Oregon, you must flip it. There we go. I kind of left it hanging a little bit on that. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Utes your first listen every day. As we jump back into it with a little song and dance action, because we're super happy. Utah was just absolutely flat out dominant. But I think that we've talked a lot about the offense, and there were a lot of players of the game that Utah released on their little announcement. A lot of special teams guys, Kamoi Latu. Shout out to my guy T-Boney for making special teams week in his 10th year, finally
getting the recognition he deserves.
Proud accomplishment for the GOAT. I cannot confirm this, but I think likely still one of the best singing voices on the team. All that aside, I think what really made this game for me and what made it work for Utah, the special teams was much improved. There's no doubt about that. And I think Covey's punt return was the nail in the coffin, more or less. The reason that Utah won this game, and it feels very familiar, was because of the defense.
Dude, yeah. It was an impressive performance. And this Oregon offense, like, it's a lot of fun to watch, right? When you watch this Oregon run game, they run a lot of powers.
When they're cooking.
Yeah, they run a lot of powers. They run a lot of counters. And for guys like us, like me and you, Brian, that love offensive line play, it's beautiful to watch at times. There's just the way it all happens and unfolds. It's a lot of fun. And so this was going to be a difficult challenge for this Utah team. Not only because of that, because of the play, because of the play designs, but this offensive line for Oregon is massive and they're physical, and it was going to be a tough test. And so what they did on Saturday night was just incredible. It was remarkable what they were able to do, because they not only, held their ground against a really large offensive line, but they took on blocks. They stuffed the run. They kept their linebackers free and safeties free to make plays. And this was, I think, the culmination of a lot of their good games and, you know, their hiccups, their bad games along the way. This was just all of it coming together. And it was really, really awesome to see that from the defense.
It was, because I think this is a group that still, no matter what's going on at the University of Utah, the defense is always going to have a lot of pride in what they do. I think holding Travis Dye to 6 rushes and 29 yards is outstanding. Byron Cardwell being the leading rusher, not too surprising in terms of just like, I know that's a talented kid. You and I have known him, that name, through recruiting and everything like that and watching him come up. We knew he had some skill set. I think what's surprising about that is that he should be third on that list, not first. And they kept Anthony Brown in check, and like, he was just awful. Like, there's no other way to describe it. It felt like Utah really exposed some cultural issues with this Oregon team, and how, like, I don't know that necessarily the Micah Pittman departure had anything to do with it. I know the injuries to Redden Johnson probably played a factor, but like, Brown was never comfortable enough to get him the ball, even if they were there. So I think, you know, that's even a little bit questionable, but it's clear that this Oregon team doesn't buy into the guy behind the center just quite as much as Utah does in theirs. I'll ask it this way. What did you see from Utah that they did such a good job in keeping him uncomfortable?
And they did a lot. When you watch Anthony Brown, like, it's really, really clear that he's a, I don't want to say a limited quarterback. He's got a big arm. You know, he can make throws deep down the field with tremendous accuracy, but there's a lack of feel for the type of throws that are required against really good defenses. There's a lack of feel, a lack of anticipation. Receivers have to be clearly identified as open receivers, right? For Brown to make throws. And so he keeps a lot of throws short. I think like 80% or something of his completions are within 10 yards. So that's like a lot of screens. That's a lot of quick stuff. And so you look at how he's had success as a quarterback. A lot of it has come against the blitz, where, you know, he's hitting the hot routes and that kind of stuff. Where he's struggled a lot is when teams actually don't blitz and they keep guys in coverage. And so Utah did a tremendous job of mixing up pressures to speed up his clock, you know, where they were getting after him, and the defensive line did a great job of getting after him as well without blitzes. Like, what they were doing, stunting and twisting with Junior Tafuna, Hoati Pututau, Aliki Vamahi, and Mika Tafua, all of those guys, you know, getting pressure on him. I think Mika ended something with like 6 pressures. Junior Tafuna had 4 pressures. You know, these guys were getting after him, getting in his face to make him uncomfortable. And then what they were doing, they were keeping guys in coverage and congesting his vision, his view, congesting windows to make it difficult and taking away those quick throws. So yeah, he got the deep completion of 40 yards, but outside of that, like, they made him beat them through the air, and he didn't do that. And it was a great design by mixing up pressures, mixing up guys in coverage, mixing up looks in terms of the coverages, cover 2, cover 1, cover 3, cover 6, where you're keeping guys in those short zones. It was a masterful game plan from Scally and the defense, and they executed it great.
True or false, Cole Bishop is the reason why Utah's defense has played so well lately.
Oh, man. I mean, it's hard to say false. Like, there are a number of other big factors, but Cole Bishop's like emergence over the last 3 weeks has been impressive. Like, this kid can play, and he's provided such a spark where he's that big athlete where he can cover, you know, ground in coverage. He can get after, he can tack, he can attack the line of scrimmage. He can do it all. Like, he's, man, he's a star player in the making. It's awesome to see him blossom this late in the season.
It is. And I think he's come a really long way from a very nervous looking freshman that was going the wrong way in coverage against Arizona State in the very first drive of that game. I think it's a credit to two things. One, he is, you know, and you've talked to him more than I have, but he's a very mild mannered kid off the field. I wouldn't say soft spoken, but respectful, polite.
Very.
Southern, yes. Probably a good way to describe it.
Yep.
He is an absolute mental beast on the field, and you're starting to see his personality and his confidence come out. He's fired up. He's making big plays, and it's growing with every single game. I think, you know, I understand why people are excited about the Richie Bishop Bash Brothers potential. They'll likely only get a year of it if, you know, things really pan out the way they should, and who even knows where Cole Bishop is positionally at that point in time, because he's pretty much playing all over the field. And I just, this team is such a strong example, I think, of a theory that I've had for a little bit now about the 5-6 games that Utah played, but the 6 games they were supposed to play last fall just simply were not enough, and everybody else was so much further ahead, and they've now had to take that next step. Did you have like a other than obviously Cole Bishop, did you have a standout from the defense for this game?
Man, Junior Tafuna was tremendous in this one. And he's a guy where, again, you go back earlier in the season, like, he's getting pushed around. He's attacking the wrong gaps. He's getting turned around. Like, just, you know, just a lot of things where, you know, like, okay, he's a freshman and this is going to be a tough year. But he's continued to put in the work, you know, not only in the film room to learn what to look for, but working his technique and that kind of stuff. He's really come along over the last three weeks or so, where now he's not only much stronger, he's a much stronger presence, but he's now like attacking and creating havoc in the backfield, where it's a lot of fun to have that. From the inside, Utah has always been able to get pressure from the edges, but now they've got guys like Junior and like Aliki, who are capable of getting pressure from the interior, which, you know, if you can get that combined with what you have on the edge, like, oh man, like that's super, super scary what this defensive line can become.
And I think what it's allowed guys like Devin Kafusi and Huati Pututau to become more change of pace guys. And I love Huati's game. And every time we talk to an offensive lineman, they always say, like, he's the most difficult to block. But I think he's not an every down guy necessarily in this scheme, right? But he can provide that spark, that push, that pressure. Now, Junior is a different beast, because Junior is just out there just every single play, like, I'm going to stay in this fight and you can't stop me. He's just a bundle of energy and force. But I think he's a really excellent example of the fact that, like, defensive line is not just about being big and bullying the guy across from you. It is about technique. It is about hand placement. It is about, like you said, gap assignment and reading things and being quick to get to your reads and knowing and being confident in that. I'm going to ask you this. Did Devin Lloyd lock down all the awards Saturday night? Yes or no?
I mean, You're putting yourself at risk, you know, to get tackled by a linebacker shot out of a cannon if you don't give him the awards. Bro, that hit that he put on Travis Dye.
Whoa. Lordy. Whoa. Jeez.
I can't remember the last hit I've seen like that, where you're just like, it draw the audible ooze from the press box. Right. And like, we know these are working press boxes. We're not supposed to make noise. And everybody was, ooh. And like, you could hear it through the crowd. It was, man, just an incredible hit. Like, and again, because the defensive line playing sound allowed Devin Lloyd a free shot, and man, he landed it, and it was awesome.
Free shot or not, it was a freak play from him to cover that ground, to shoot the gap, to get the angle, and to blow in to die with the kind of force that he did. Like, it was such a short space. Like, he didn't have like a full sprint, like get into him, pop him from surprise. Like, he kind of caught him from the side. And like, I mean, that's still a lot of force, but my goodness, like it was super impressive. I just thought he shone so much brighter than Thibodeau. And it's not knocking Kayvon. I'm not trying to say that he's not, you know, worth every, you know, projection of him being the number one overall pick. He is. I love Devin Lloyd. I'm still taking Kayvon at this point in time over him. But he was, you know, I think he showed the difference in these two programs right now, right? Where Oregon is still a program that is focused around talent, and Utah is a program that is focused around scheme and development and fit. And that was on full display on Saturday. We'll wrap this up because we could talk about this for hours. And I know that people could listen for the hours too, but I have to do like four more of these this week. the atmosphere on Saturday night,
man. Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah. It was, I can't remember the last time that I've seen it as packed as it was, you know, at kickoff, and then as loud as it was throughout the game. And you know, I wasn't here for that 2008 TCU game. So I didn't get to experience that, but that was the loudest on that Britton Covey return. That was the loudest I've ever heard Rice-Eccles Stadium. It was, it was incredible, man. Like, I've talked to how many have I talked to now? Three recruits now that were at the game, three official visitors, and they all raved about the atmosphere at the game. They raved about the crowd, how loud it was. And like, Rice-Eccles Stadium, the fan base put on a show. You know, as much as like, obviously, like, we're here for Utah football, and they were the ones putting on the show, like on the turf. But Rice-Eccles Stadium really, really showed well, you know, on primetime television, national television. Like, it was an incredible showing from the fan base in Rice-Eccles Stadium. It was awesome.
Yeah, not bad for a 1990s Honda Civic, is it?
Nope. I mean, it's a 1990s Honda Civic with a really, really nice upgrade, you know, in the back end.
there's a secret Nissan turbine motor in there that nobody told Jeff Hansen about. Inside joke between us and Jeff. If you want to get after him on Twitter, he does still own the Blogcast, so technically, and maybe. Maybe he just owns us. I don't know.
Nope. No. I mean, maybe he does. No, he does. It's bad.
I told him that he single-handedly won rivalry week with the work that he put in on.
Oh, bro, he lapped me. Like, yeah. It
was not a fair fight.
It was not.
But he had about a decade's worth of pent-up frustration. Yeah. That he unleashed. And I think that arguably Utah.
That was the thing. Like, it was clear he's put in a lot of thought to those things. Like,
yeah,
I was like sitting here thinking, like, he just asked me on Sunday, and so it's Monday, and I'm like, like, what can I say about the rival? And I couldn't think of anything. And here he has like this full 5-page report of things that he hates about and likes about Utah. And it's like, bro, did you just whip this up? Or did you write this like, over the last five, anyways, we're going down a path that we don't need to.
It's an article that I think Utah fans can go back and read now, knowing where they're at and what they're on the cusp of. I think we talk a lot about preparation. I didn't see anything out of Utah this game that leads me to believe that there's not still more in the tank if they do face Oregon again. What do you feel the same way, or where are you at? Where do you stand with that?
I mean, you know, did Utah do anything special in that game against Oregon?
The crazy part about it, right? Hell, like, it was just, it was somebody said something like, oh, the offense is so much like more like exciting and interesting right now. I was like,
no,
like, it's inside zone, outside
zone. That's all it was. It was like
zone, outside zone. Like, we haven't hit much power. We haven't hit much. We haven't seen hardly any counter. We haven't seen any counter GTE.
No.
Haven't QB counter. Some GTE. Some split zone here and there. Like, but what they're winning games with is motion and personnel right now. 13 personnel.
It's like the game plan was I don't want to say it was vanilla because it wasn't, because they did mix up looks. They did some different things with GTE counters and all that.
Oregon well scouted, I think was what it was. And they knew what their tendencies were, and they were on top of it with their adjustments every time. And Oregon never recovered, which is, that was really mind boggling to me. And maybe it's, I don't know what's going on with Mario Cristobal. Like, but he looked like he had been holding in a turd since last Saturday, and it just wasn't going to come out the entire game. And it's like, that's kind of how they coached. It's just so tight.
He went into that thinking like, oh yeah, I got 44 four and five star players on this roster, like we'll win by 31. Like, yeah, that's what it's gonna be game. But no, like Utah just came into this like you said earlier in the show, like they had a game plan that they believed in. And they executed to a T. And it's interesting, like the game plan was the type of game plan where if they're losing, like everybody's upset, everybody's losing their minds, fire Ludwig, but because, you know, it worked, like, oh, Ludwig, he's brilliant. But it's the same thing. Like it's, they didn't do anything special. They were just executing. And when you execute, every play call looks great.
Look, I know they got a lot of yards on inside zone on first downs. It still bugs the heck out of me that we run it so much. But I'm not going to complain. And I think, you know, for the most part, Andy Ludwig deserves a ton of credit because he can be hit or miss as a play caller. He was 100% spot on. And you know, I think there's still gears to this offense. Like, and I think you saw it right before halftime with the way that they can move with the 2-minute drill, where they have some things that they can still unleash and do if necessary. But at this point in time, with the way that they're rolling and the offensive line doing what they're doing, I have to shout out Keaton Bills. And we're getting real long on this episode, whatever. Deal with it. I'm sorry, David Locke, if you're listening. I hope you're not listening. You're doing a Jazz game right now.
I hope he is.
Yeah.
I hope he is.
Yeah. If you're listening, I apologize, David, but we just kind of had to stretch this one out. You know, Keaton Bills was incredible. And this team is just rolling on a different level, and I think so much of it is credit to Andy Ludwig, who he calls a game as if he's playing chess, you know. And I think that's a fitting metaphor given what Kyle Whittingham said at the end of the Arizona State game, game set match, checkmate, or you know, whatever it was that he said.
Checkmate.
Andy Ludwig makes the first move with his pawn in that first down inside zone every single time. And he waits to see what the other team does. And then he just takes off. And some of these calls and the way that they're doing the offense is really impressive. The motion is, he's got the personnel to do it too. Like, this may be the last time that you see the TNT out there all together this year. I don't want to speculate too much on that, but it's too obvious right now. And Brant Keithy's gotten, getting all sorts of attention from everywhere. And I think Cole Fotheringham, you know, anybody who's really watching the game sees the work that he puts in. He is one of the best edge blockers on the planet. Fight me if you disagree. And pass protectors too. That's the part that just blowing my mind. And for he and Dalton Kincaid to just kind of play ping pong with a guy like Kayvon is just super impressive. I want to talk about one last thing because you are the recruiting, it doesn't even feel fair to call you expert, like savant, maybe genius, maybe Oracle. You are the Oracle.
I just get lucky.
Yeah. For about 10 years now, you've been getting lucky. So as someone who does not get that kind of lucky in the love life, I just want to make sure that people understand that this kind of lucky and this kind of consistency just means that you're really good. And you know what? If I were going to bet on something, I'd bet on Steve Bartle breaking some recruiting news at some point in time. I don't know that if you go to betonline.ag, if they'll put odds down for it, but I'd be more than happy. Steve, did you know that something happens on Thanksgiving that's not food related?
Football?
Football. So if you're going to play in a turkey bowl, go to betonline.ag and ask them to set some lines for it. I'm just kidding. Nothing goes better with football, though. Turkey, all the fixings, the stuffing, then a little bit of side action. That's right. You're hanging out with Aunt Louise and Grandpa Joe and the whole crew. You're probably sitting there feeling really stuffy. There's like 16 cats. I don't know whose house I'm at right now where this is like going on. It's definitely not my house. But the best part about it is you can stay sane by throwing down a little bit of your Skittles there at BetOnline. They have more props, odds, and lines than ever before. They remain your number one spot for all the sports action this Thanksgiving. So you can head to their new updated desktop or mobile website and sign up today. You'll receive a 50% welcome bonus with the promo code LOCKEDON. All you have to do is enter that promo code when you sign up and you will receive the bonus automatically. But the good news is it's not just football. Steve, I know you're a huge NHL fan. You gotta be gambling. You got the hockey hair right now.
Oh yeah. I got the mud flap.
Is that an homage to a certain team? Jaromir Jagr?
Yeah. Definitely Jaeger. Where's he at? He's at he's with the Penguins.
Probably still working on year number 30 or something like that. But
totally drafted in 1982.
Same year I was born. But the bottom line is there's a litany of bets from pro and college hoops, NHL, boxing, UFC, even your favorite casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. It's the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet online. They are stuffed. Oh boy. With deals this Thanksgiving. That was in the read, like Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Wrapping up a marathon edition of the Locked On Utes podcast here with my best friend.
My best friend.
Steve, man. Dropper of the Barta Bombs. You're a man of many leisures, many talents, many abilities. Notwithstanding, one of those is being a recruiting expert. And I say that in the most a PhD. In fact, our good friends, Andrew McCullough and Christian Judd, wherever listening, they would probably grant you a PhD of recruiting specifics.
Okay, I'll take it.
Utah's done something very interesting that I don't know if I've seen happen in the past. They have just absolutely loaded up the last few home games with recruits. I don't know if there's like an exact total of guys that were in town for their visits on for the game against Oregon, but it had to be just absolutely monstrous between unofficials and officials and visitors that were invited to go hang out on the sideline. Is this something that you've seen before, or is this kind of something that Utah has been, you know, kind of hiding up until now?
Man, I tell you what, like you're pretty spot on. I can't remember the last time I've seen that number of visitors, whether official or unofficial visitors. Like I can't remember that number of players in attendance for a game before. And there were guys from the classes of 2022, 2023, and 2024 in attendance there. You know, as best as I could count, so there were 9 official visitors. They had their commits Nate Johnson, quarterback. They had Lander Barton, Carson Tabarachi, Tabo, who just committed last week. They welcomed 3-star safety Jeffrey Ugo, 3-star athlete Teo Johnson, and then their 2023 commit, Mataeke Helu out of Tooele. So they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 commits there at the game as well. And then there were just a large number of unofficial visitors as well. And as best as I could identify them at the game, I counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 unofficial visitors. So you're looking at a weekend where there were at least 25 visitors that I know for sure were there. and probably many, many more. Like, there were a lot of guys that were there, local products, local guys that were there that maybe aren't, you know, recruits at Utah's level, but they're, you know, high school kids there for, there for a big game, and Utah welcomed them all. And, it was really, really impressive to see that, because not only did they have, you know, a large number of recruits there and commits there, you know, they had guys like Garrett Bowles, they had Julian Blackman, Terrell Burgess. Like, it was a really special atmosphere. And obviously you have a primetime game on national television, big stage like that, special uniforms. Like, it was, it all came together beautifully for Utah this weekend. You know, obviously capped off with the big performance on the field, but, you know, recruiting, this was a big, big weekend for the Utes.
So would you say the rumors of Utah's recruiting demise were extremely exaggerated, over-exaggerated?
Oh man. Yeah. Like, here's the thing about Utah is, like, they're never, you know, they're never going to really, really impress in the summer. Like, they'll start get going. They'll get going, you know, they'll pick up some commits here and there. They had some really big ones this summer, obviously, with Nate Johnson, Brandon Rose, Jalen Glover. And then they start to kind of pick up momentum as we get closer and closer to November and December. And that's been the case again this year. I think this is now the third or fourth consecutive year where we've seen Utah with this late push. And it's, you know, it's just how they operate. And so, you know, everybody was up in arms back in August and September. And it was, you know, this is just how they operate. Like, they're going to be deliberate. They're going to be methodical. And yeah, like, it's not even close to this program, you know, trending down. Like, they are knocking on the door of yet again, setting the bar for their highest rated class in terms of average rated commit. Like, they're knocking at the door again this season.
I think I know who your favorite recruit in this class is, and it rhymes with Dalen Glover. Jalen Glover, and it's understandably so. When you watch his tape, it jumps off. There's not a whole lot of evaluation that really needs to happen with a guy like that. Is there a recruit that's currently committed that you might call like a sneaky good pickup for Utah?
And I mean, you're right. Like, Jalen Glover is, I love running backs. I love evaluating running backs because, you know, it's so, so interesting what makes a good running back, right? Like, everybody kind of gets enamored with just raw athleticism, guys that can run fast, but there's so much more to it. And Jalen Glover is a prospect that I love, but in terms of like an underrated guy, I love Teo Johnson. I think he's a fantastic athlete where, you know, he's 6'2", 180 pounds. And this kid runs like he's so raw. Like, he's raw as a track athlete too. Like, he just started running track, I think, this last year. And what does he do? Like, he runs a 10.65, 10.63, something like that. And it's like, he hasn't trained as a track athlete. Like, he's just out there running and he's running fast. 10.63 in the 100 meter is like, it's stupid how fast that is. And it's just natural speed. Like, if he spent time training as a track athlete, he could be pretty damn fast. So, you know, in terms of just his raw potential, it's exciting because he can play receiver. He can play safety. You know, he's got a great long jump where it's darn near 23 feet, which is, you know, that's D1 level long jumping. And those are traits where if you can jump, if you can run, you know, that's going to translate at both wide receiver and safety. So he's a guy that I really, really like. I'm really, really intrigued by.
I wonder with him if playing quarterback is part of what's kind of hurt him, not necessarily getting discovered, but in getting evaluated. And he's coming from Idaho. And it seems like Utah is starting to find a little bit of rhythm recruiting up there. Jonah Ellis, obviously having a good impact on the defense. I love Teo too. I'm very intrigued by Chris Reed, the wide receiver out of Florida. Has shades of, and I hate making comparisons, but there are shades of the kind of athleticism that Kenneth Scott showed and his ability to get up. I don't think he's an explosive guy necessarily, but he is a big, strong receiver that can go up and get the ball, and I like that part of him. With the guys that are the in-state guys, If you had your own personal board, where would they rank? Lander, Carson, etc.
So, I mean, like me, like...
Because I know that the number one overall ranked recruit in the state is Devin Brown. I think it's because he's a quarterback. And look, everybody can see the arm talent. I think Lander's a better prospect at the moment.
No, like when you're talking about a guy that you know for sure is going to make it to the NFL, like it's hard not to go with Lander Barton, right? And Devin Brown is, you know, he's the higher rated prospect because he's been out on the cam circuit and he's a very good talent. I'm not trying to like be dismissive of his talent at all. Like he's very much earned his rating. He's got incredible arm talent where he can push the ball down the field. But for me, when you consider Lander Barton and what he brings to the table as a linebacker with his size, his athleticism, his advanced understanding of football at this stage, where he's coming in already, you know, with an understanding of what's to come because of, you know, the experience his brothers have been through. You know, he trains with Cody, he trains with Devin Lloyd in the off season. That kind of stuff is going to put him ahead at this position. And so, you know, he's coming into Utah where he has the potential to be a 3-year player, where he comes in, plays right away, and he's like, all right, just continue to go out, do your thing, and you're in the NFL in a couple of years. Like, that's the type of player that he is. So I really, really like Lander. Really, really like Carson Tabarachi. Love his potential. There's a lot of conversation about whether he should play linebacker, whether he should play tight end, H-back. I'm of the opinion that he's more of a proactive athlete, where he's better with the ball in his hands. And you're taking more advantage of his athleticism and skills, on offense. But man, his potential on defense, you know, at linebacker and kind of that hybrid too, like that's really, really intriguing as well. So love the two Utah commits. The guy that I really like as well. Love Dallas Vakalahi. Like where he's at, he's got a great offer sheet where he's got, you know, Stanford, TCU, Oklahoma State, just some really, really good programs involved with him. 6'3", 270. And this dude is like explosive for his size. So he's got a great blend of size and athleticism, and he's a playmaker in the backfield. So he's going to be a mission guy. But then, you look at the rest of the in-state class. I love Cody Hagan, and I know it hurts to say that because, you know, he is committed to the team down there. But Cody Hagan, man, I loved watching him. He's got that competitive streak. He's got the athleticism. Everybody knows he's got speed, but he's got that competitive streak as well, where he's just, you know, he's trying to beat the guy across from him every single play. So love his game. And I love the McKenzie twins. They've got a good blend of athleticism and size where they're intriguing as well. So, you know, this in-state class is really, really interesting. A lot of D1 talent this year. Maybe not in terms of the high-end top talent where we've seen the most, you know, amount of 4-stars and that kind of stuff, but love Lander Barton. Devin Brown is a bona fide talent. Cody Hagan. This is a really good in-state class.
There's a lot of guys too, like the Jet Mineys and the Luke Hydes of the world that, like, yes, probably haven't got, you know, Easton Comer, you know, that just haven't gotten the attention really. And some of this recruiting cycle is a little goofy because I think teams are still, you know, recovering from the COVID stuff.
That's a big, big factor in this cycle where, you know, coaches weren't able to get out and evaluate these kids last year. And the group that was impacted the most by that was the guys who were juniors last year. Right. So that's this group. And, you know, it's a lot of late evaluations, a lot of late bloomers this year where you're seeing a guy like a Tyler Knack from Brighton, where he just kind of comes out of nowhere because, you know, he wasn't exposed as much last season. You know, he didn't get the exposure last year, but
didn't even play the position last year.
Yeah. He was playing defensive line, you know? And so now he's in the position that he's probably best suited for. And he's blown up. Now he's got 14 offers in the matter of 5 weeks. And, you know, he's worth every offer. And so it's really fun to see that. And the thing about Tyler Knack, he's visiting Utah this weekend.
There's a couple other guys coming into town. They've done a really good job of blanketing the visits and kind of loading up. And I think they're going to lock down a lot of this class in December, and that's going to serve them well once they have to deal with the transfer portal. Kyle Whittingham said today in the press conference, like, transfer portal is going to be mayhem. I agree with him.
Yes.
I think you're going to see some exits from the University of Utah, maybe some guys that won't be a surprise. I doubt that there will be too many that will be. I think most of the exits that you'll see are likely guys getting ready to go to the NFL, and understandably and deservedly so. But again, you and I could go, we do this in our downtime as friends. Like, this is a drop in the bucket. Like, we're not even to halftime. This is a first quarter right here. This was a punt return for us. Just another, Britton Covey, punt return. But I want to say thank you so much for coming on with me, Steve.
Of course,
should have done this more this season, but I'll take the hit for that one.
No, it's on me.
No, this one is definitely on me, adapting to a new job and the season and everything like that. But the good news is I think I've kind of gotten some level ground on all that stuff. So we'll keep this stuff going for sure. I know that everybody who's listening knows who you are, but just tell everybody what you got going on and where they can find you.
My name is Steven Bartle. I work at UdeZone.com. My Twitter handle is SBartle247. I'm a professional managing editor of UdeZone.com, and I cover recruiting and other sorts of sports.
You can get a month-long membership at UdeZone for $1 right now. It is going to be the best dollar that you'll spend.
But you can't?
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
I might do it myself.
Yeah, like for $1? Come on.
Yeah.
I got like $5 I could use for that.
I need a burner account.
Send us your fake emails. Sign up, push UdeZone.
AD, Kevin Durant.
Yes.
Not enough UdeZone.
The not so slim Reapers here. But go sign up for UdeZone now. Like, even if you're just going to do it for a month, this is the time to do it. The board is always busy. There's plenty of conversation going on there. Even if you don't want to get into breaking down the game, like, somebody's got a taco thread going there, but you're not going to find anywhere else that's going to have the depth of information as you talk transitions from going into the season to recruiting and then back into the bowl game. It's mayhem over there. So go sign up today. Steve, again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Brian.
Love you, dude. I love these shows, and I apologize to everybody who's having to listen to this for an hour. But at the same time, you know, it's just,
thank you for listening for an hour.
Yes. Thank you for listening for an hour. And sometimes it's, you know, I know that listeners, that this is for the listeners, but sometimes it's also for us. So, I appreciate the opportunity to get caught up with you. And happy celebration of a day of recognition of your survivalship here on the earth on the 27th.
The 33rd year.
It's key. I remember my 30s. That's going to be it for today's show. The silliness is now going to end. We're going to go stuff our faces with some stuffing, probably, at least, if not tonight, maybe on Thursday. Want to thank you all for tuning in. Remind you that you can get all the betting advice and the one-stop shop that you need for all your gambling needs by listening to Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. They are free and available on all platforms, as are we. This has been the Locked On Utes podcast for November 23rd, 2021, and we will be back again tomorrow.